Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Elixir Mix. This week, we're talking to Eric. I'm always hesitant to say your name. Bolikovsky?
Spot on, Bolikovsky.
I need to just say it like eight times later on in the day when I'm not thinking about it. We also have Alan Wyma.
Hello.
And I'm Charles Max Wood from devchat.tv. And yeah, this week we had our guest kind of cancel last minute. So what we're going to talk about is we're talking about resources in the Elixir community and yeah, just kind of where we go to stay current, keep up on things, know what's going on, what we're learning about, that kind of stuff. I remember working my tail off to become a senior developer. I read every book I could get my hands on. I went to any conference I could and watched the videos about the things that I thought I needed to learn. And eventually, I got that senior developer job. And then I realized that the rest of my career looked just like where I was now. I mean, where was the rush I got from learning? What was I supposed to do to keep growing? And then I found it. I got the chance to mentor some developers. I started a podcast and helped many more developers. I did screencasts and helped even more developers. I kind of became a dev hero, and now I want to help you become one too. And if you're looking forward to something more than doing the same thing at a different job 3 years from now, then join the Dev Heroes Accelerator. I'll walk you through the process of building and growing a following and finding people that you can uniquely help as you build the next stage of your career. You can learn more at devheroesaccelerator.com. So I'm curious, do you guys have a favorite resource that you go to level up or to learn?
Well, for me being a complete newbie, I have been finding that the beautiful programming elixir, the pick that I had last time on the last episode, is beautiful and such like it's a pretty good resource to start things off, to just, you know, get an overview of what are the different things in Elixir and go through entire language feature by feature. But there are also various resources that I've seen out there that are also quite interesting.
Yeah, that's a terrific book. I'm assuming Alan has it as well or is gone through it. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong, but I've picked it up and I really liked it as well. That's by Dave Thomas, who's a friend of mine. So yeah.
Yeah. We actually have, I have nearly every Elixir book I could find just because I'm trying to just swallow as much information as I can. And also the topic is quite small if you compare it to Java or JavaScript. Mm-hmm. So that's a great book.
And what other books are there?
Book is actually relevant, I believe, even since, because that's 1.6. Mm-hmm. Wow. Saucier book is actually really, really great. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. What is it? Wow, it's losing my mind. Oh, Elixir in Action. There's just a new edition that came out about 1 or 2 years ago. That's also fantastic.
Yeah, we've had Sasha on the show before, and he's solid. Good stuff.
I think there's even there's a bit long list of different books that are recommended on the actual Elixir Lang website. Just looking it up here. And yeah. Right. I'll post the link in the chat here.
Nice.
And out on top comes the book that I literally have in my hand right now. And yeah, and there's also, I see it, Elixir in Action, Adopting Elixir, The Little Elixir, an OTP guidebook, and must be like at least another... Okay, it's actually not that many books per se, but there are more like 7 or 8. And then there's a bunch of different courses and websites that are also recommended.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that Bruce Tate, I woke up with a tension headache this morning and I'm a little slow on those days. Bruce Tate, Groxio, grox.io, they've got some courses that are top notch as well. And just a ton of good stuff there. I've also heard some really good things about Brian Clark, Pragmatic Studio, in their course. I've heard that's really, really good.
That's a name I've heard time and time again.
Yeah.
Brian Clark.
The Pragmatic Studio one is really great, actually. I even though sometimes I kind of keep taking these simple books, kind of just reading them over and over again, each book kind of has an interesting twist and some tips and tricks that have been quite helpful for me to kind of really wrap my mind around certain things. Like what's also interesting is that in Elixir and Erlang, actually, there's no such thing as actually a Boolean. There's actually just atoms of true and false. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys know this or not. And somehow that gets translated as a Boolean, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, I mean, it's not super important, but it is interesting to see that there's actually some things that are missing. Yeah, that's
by the way, it's Mike Clark,
pretty crazy. There's also...
My bad. Anyway.
Yeah, I heard the name Brian Clark. I was a little bit confused. I tried to look it up. That's an actor, right? Brian Clark.
I don't know.
American professional wrestler.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, that's definitely who I was thinking. Nah, I've never heard of him. Anyway, it's Mike Clark. I've talked to Mike I know him from the Ruby community, so it's been quite a long time since I've talked to him. But yeah, lots of stuff there. Actually, I really do want to dive in and pick up some Phoenix too. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, a lot of these kind of more famous guys, right? Like Mike Clark, Dave Thomas. I pumped Dave Thomas into Google, and sometimes I get Dave Thomas from Wendy's coming up. And over here, there's actually another guy named Dave Thomas, and he made this database system called KDB. And when I was working in the bank, we got an email saying, because we're going to have guest speakers all the time, right? Because it's a pretty big bank. And we had guest speaker Dave Thomas, and I saw the description was actually Dave Thomas, the one we're talking about, the Pragmatic author. And so I also kind of know him pretty well. And I sent him a message. I said, hey, are you in Hong Kong? What are you? You didn't let me know you're coming over here. He's like, no, what are you talking about? And I sent him a screenshot of the email. I said, it says you're coming over here to speak. He's like, no, that's not me. I don't know what you're talking about. And I had to clarify. And actually, they had to send out an addendum that says, oh, no, this is the other Dave Thomas, not this one. So his name messed up the description.
That's funny.
I'm looking at the cover of another one of my favorite books there called The Pragmatic Programmer, and it says David Thomas. But are we talking about the same person?
Same guy. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Same person.
Yeah. Terrific guy. I mean, I listened to a podcast with him something last year, and I was like, wow, this is such a good book. I just have to get it. And it's been a really good resource for me to get back to.
Yeah. He's a solid guy. Andy Hunt is also a really, really smart guy. The other half of Pragmatic Programmer. But yeah, really enjoying that. I'm curious, any other resources that you're liking? I know that Udemy has a course that I think I bought, but I never get around to going through it.
I guess one of the underrated, but also most efficient resources are simply raw source code. You know, just go on GitHub and find some of the top repositories, popular Elixir-based projects, and actually reading through that source code can really be instructive, and you can learn so much. Sometimes it can be hard to find a very good repository, but some of the code is really well-documented and self-documenting. That can be a really good way to pick up new concepts I found.
Yep, absolutely. I think the course that I picked up on Udemy was the Complete Elixir and Phoenix Bootcamp, and it's a 17-hour course. So
something you can manage to do over
is
the weekend.
Somebody, I was going to say, as somebody who's kind of new to Elixir, like Eric, how is it for you to pick up everything? Because it is quite different. I think your background is mostly in JavaScript, I remember, or am I wrong in terms of you kind of programming things?
Yeah, I've been doing JavaScript for several years now, but I have been through Java, Objective-C, PHP, and ActionScript. Those are kind of like the main languages I've been through in the past. So I do have a pretty good grasp on objective-oriented programming principles, and I had been exploring functional programming for a couple of years before I actually jumped on the Elixir bandwagon. So I was kind of very prepared in terms of the fundamentals that I have seen come up in Elixir. But some stuff is quite new, such as pattern matching was really, you know, something that really blew my mind away. I had been hearing a lot of interesting things about it, but I had no idea what it actually was until I started reading this book. So a lot of things are completely new. Other things are, you know, partially familiar territory.
I mean, how was it when you first see pattern matching? Because it took me some time to really wrap my mind around it and like what you can do with it. And I have another guy who works with me. He's a more junior guy. He just graduated about, I don't know, half a year, a year ago now. I can't remember. And he's been doing Dart, which is similar to JavaScript and other things like that. And when he saw pattern matching, I think it just took him a long time just to understand what it even is and how it all, the whole thing works, right? So, like, how was it when, it's been so long since I've remembered the first time, but, like, how was it that, you know, you're taken to this right now when you see it? Like, what was the first kind of pattern matching where you look at it and you're like, what is this thing even doing?
I think one of the, I'm just opening the book now and I'm trying to, and one of the crazier examples is, take, for instance, factorial, where you can define a factorial as, well, you can define it recursively, where you will have the same function or variation of the same function being called again and again until you reach basically the base case. I can show you guys on like the thing, but I mean, this is of course not going to be very friendly for our listeners. But what really got to me about pattern matching was to think about it as essentially if and else if, and like basically like a huge switch tree that you would have inside of a normal function inside of JavaScript. That's how I wrap my head around it initially. But the really incredible thing was that you were basically elevating what would normally be like a lot of conditional checks inside of a single function to be part of the signature of the function itself. And I just fell in love with this wonderful way that Elixir has. I guess it also builds on work that was done earlier in Erlang, of course. But I have no idea if it's like Erlang or Elixir as well. But this whole idea of actually having like a function or a variation of the function being intelligently picked based on the nature of the input arguments, this is really, really something really cool. And I really enjoyed that.
Have you ever seen the binary pattern matching before?
Binary pattern matching? No, that doesn't ring a bell.
I haven't done anything with it either.
Oh, it's basically if you're doing a lot of networking stuff, it's really crazy the stuff you can do. I really need to kind of show you an example so that you know what I'm talking about, because when you look at it, you'll be just blown out of your mind about how strange it could be. Because what you can do, you know, like when you have like a packet of, if you ever looked at networking, but when you have a packet, right, you have some information in there. And one of them, I believe, is like a checksum. So you have like a header with some information, then you have your payload, and then you have a checksum somewhere in there. You can actually take that and you can pattern match that, and then you can easily see if everything's kind of matching up just all in one line, if you know exactly what the structure of it is. I wish I had a picture somewhere, but that kind of stuff, like if you look at recently the NX came out from Jose. Mm-hmm. And in his example, he actually managed to open up a file. And have you seen that before, where you just kind of pattern matched out everything from just opening up a single file with all the data inside?
No, I haven't seen that one. Seems like there's a... Yeah, seems like I'm only scratching the surface of pattern matching as far as I'm concerned. Another way of thinking it is you basically have something as concise and succinct as a regex expression, where you can, call the function that you want exactly, depending on what is the nature of the input arguments. That's mainly how I've understood this is like the main use case of pattern matching that I've seen so far, like calling the correct variation of a function. But from what you're hinting at here, I think there's much, much more that you can do with pattern matching.
Yeah, absolutely. And now that you're talking about it, it makes a lot of sense to me, Alan, just from the standpoint of the binary pattern matching and Erlang in particular, having been written by Ericsson for phone switches, right? And where it's, you know, converting voice to basically binary signal, right? Then it can, for example, pick up tones or things like that, right? And route things that way, or, you know, pick up the phone number off of there as a binary string and push things along that way. And so do some of the routing just by picking up different parts of the packets, which seems really, really interesting. And then from there also, yeah, as soon as you said parsing files with pattern matching, I'm sitting there going, wow, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, you know, again, just saying, okay, this is the pattern you're going to match against. And this is how you recognize, you know, these different headers or these different aspects of the file, or, you know, this is the payload or data from the file, right? And then, you know, even pattern matching on the RGB for pixels or things like that. I mean, it sounds really, really fascinating to be able to, you know, pick it up and just, yeah, pull the data out as you go using pattern matching, as opposed to some of the other things where you essentially have to just parse through each bit or byte, or, you know, use a regular expression and then hope that you have something that matches up in the right way and isn't too greedy and isn't too sparse at the same time. Yeah, now I'm kind of nerding out in my head. So,
I dropped a link in there that's about how to parse PNGs. And at the beginning of a PNG file, they have information, you know, the header and mm-hmm. some other stuff that you can parse out that could be quite interesting to show off to people. There used to be much better examples. I wish I could find something, but I can't. What actually I use a lot for is and what they promoted also too in Elixir is in Phoenix channels, you have this connect parameter. And you can pattern match on the beginning. So usually you say, okay, this is a user, and then you have a colon mm-hmm. at the end. That's just very static. And then the rest of that will be like the user's ID or a token. And then what you can do is, because you don't know how long a binary is, right, at the beginning, but if you start from the beginning, you know how big the heading part is, the first part of the binary. So if that part's static, you can put a static variable there, pattern match out the rest, and then you can just, then you got your variable over here rather than saying, okay, split on the colon. And you can say, okay, the first part is this. I know that for a fact it's going to be static. The rest of it, pattern match that part out, and I'm going to use that to do whatever I want to do if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Pattern matching is kind of like elevating a type definition or a good old Java class to being something that is more like a specification or a pattern or like a massive regex where you actually say, this is the shape of the schema of the data that I'm going to take, a stream or a massive string or whatever is actually being given as input to whatever, be it a function or a parser or something else. And it's just magically picking out all the different components to you and also only letting you proceed if what you are giving as an input is actually matching the pattern that you have specified. It's kind of like a super interactive and granular specification that comes to life.
Yeah. Yeah, I know I haven't dug into all the different powerful ways you can use it, but I've already just had my mind blown just by Alan talking through it and going, I had never thought of using it that way before, but that makes sense. Really digging it. Is that blog post that you sent us, is that blog one of the ones that we have to be paying attention to, do you think? Getting back to resources, or did you pick that up from somewhere else?
I just Googled for binary pattern match in Elixir, to be honest. I was trying to find a good example. I've never heard this guy before. I don't know. He may be in the community quite big, but yeah, it's tough to say, right? So, I mean, I've been trying to follow like Elixir Weekly and Elixir Mix, see what's going on.
Yeah, Elixir Weekly is one of the places that I get info from as well, just because it comes into my inbox automatically and I don't have to think about it too hard, right? It's like, okay, somebody curated this, so that works out pretty well.
It seems like every month or so, I don't know, maybe I'm just exaggerating, but it seems like nearly every month or every couple months, there's always some conference going on in whatever relates to Beam, right? There's Beam. I think Strange Loop is also kind of somehow related. There's a lot of Elixir conferences. There's one in US, there's like three in US, right? There's at least one or two in Europe. It's really insane how many conferences there is for such a somewhat niche language or community.
Yeah, ElixirConf and ElixirConf EU, I think is the other one, are both run by Jim Fries. And I've begged him to come on the show and he's like, I don't do podcasts. But, you know, I've known him again from the Ruby community when he was running Lone Star Ruby Conference and things like that. But yeah, it's been really terrific to get to know some of these folks. And then, yeah, I've also been to, I think it was Codebeam in San Francisco. And so that was also really awesome. Let me see if I can find a link to those conferences, because that's a series of conferences, like you said, Alan, that moves around.
Nice. These are pretty good resources, actually. I mean, Elixir Weekly, I already signed up for that podcast a while ago. Actually, after our last recording, I signed up for that podcast, but I haven't seen these conferences before. So I'll definitely want to join a few of these. The ElixirConf EU is going to run 9 to 10 September in Warsaw. I really hope, and that's actually quite close to me. That's just like 1 hour flight away. I really hope the Corona pandemic will be over by then, that we can really start enjoying having physical conferences again.
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic given the trend lines after the vaccine started going out. So
yeah,
pretty excited about that. But yeah, definitely.
It's picking up speed very quickly.
What was that?
I was just going to say the vaccinations are picking up speed very quickly. Mm-hmm. So I think by September, for sure, we'll be out of the woods.
Yeah, I really hope so. I mean, there's always the possibility that the thing could mutate or this or that, but the way things are looking right now, it looks like the vaccination is actually holding up against new strains. So the numbers are going down quickly. I'm trying to think what else. There's the Elixir forum. You guys on there?
Oh, no. Is it a big community?
It's probably one of the best places to go get help is the Elixir forum. I'll put a link in the show notes here, but yeah, there are all kinds of posts in here and it's extremely handy. They talk about all kinds of stuff. Some other languages or frameworks that I kind of keep track of also have forums like this, but I think the Elixir forum is one of the best run. There's, for example, there's one for Vue, And there's a large number of Asian folks that use Vue. And so half the forum's in like Chinese. And it, you know, I mean, everybody needs a resource, but it makes it really hard for me to follow, right? Is my complaint, because half of the posts that get a whole bunch of traffic are, you know, I can't read them. And so for me, it's just so much clutter really on the list of stuff that people posted. But yeah, you know, here it's clean, it's well run. The topics are usually pretty on topic. They've got things well tagged. Yeah, lots of stuff to like about the Elixir forum.
Ah, this looks really, really good. It's been a long while since I've seen like one of these, you know, old school website forum driven sites that are actually nice and have a good structure to them. Like everything seems to be in Slack and Discord these days.
Yeah, there's a Slack channel that I'm into, but I'm on a new computer, and so I haven't actually installed Slack because it's also noisy.
Yeah, for Slack, I'm usually hanging out in the Elixir Slack channel a lot of times and kind of helping where I can and learning a lot myself from a lot of the people in the community. So even Chris McCord is on there sometimes. Mm-hmm. So usually when I log in, he's just logging off and I see him kind of giving some advice about, usually in live view. So it's a live view channel that's always kind of popping with questions.
Yep, absolutely. I'll see if I can get a link to that too, because can't remember if I had to be invited or if there was a link to join that. But
I just found the join link, actually. I'm sending it in the show notes.
Oh, awesome.
The chat here. Yeah, I wasn't actually part of that. I'm definitely gonna join the Elixir Slack channel. Man, yeah. So many nice things to look into. And I'm supposed to actually go on a holiday starting Saturday. I'll have to see if my girlfriend lets me spend time reading up on Elixir as a legitimate holiday activity.
Yeah, there's a kind lot of, going on in there.
So it's kind of like a work thing you have to get done, right? If you're going to be a part of the podcast. So good excuse if you really want to dig in, your girlfriend won't let you, right?
Yeah, precisely. We're going to fly to the Canary Islands on Saturday.
Oh,
nice. I think I'll take a few like completely non-geek days, but I think I might be able to justify having a bit of time in front of the computer and just reading up and stuff.
Yeah.
I really look forward to actually having just like, you know, the time to read a whole book without being interrupted by work in between.
Yep, absolutely.
What's another thing to kind of talk about too is that, you know, these resources that we've been kind of naming are kind of varying degrees of where people are, right? Obviously the Slack channel is kind of for all groups. But some of the books that we've been talking about make sense at certain times, like Programming Elixir from Dave Thomas. That one's pretty good for intro, I think. The Elixir in Action is actually pretty good about ramping up from beginner all the way to, you know, somewhat pretty okay stage, because mm-hmm. they go into gen servers and pool boy and these kind of things, which are pretty good. But then when you really want to level up, right, if you really want to wrap your head about OTP, that's when things get a little bit more tricky, because that's also not really a beginner topic. So don't know how far you guys got into OTP, but that one is really kind of the meat and potatoes of really why people choose Elixir and Erlang. And I was curious if you guys ever started really digging into that and what kind of resources you guys have been looking at.
I heard it mentioned a few times on various, well, obviously podcast episodes of Elixir Mix from the past and in articles and stuff, but I haven't really dug into it yet. I think I looked it up once and then I forgot what it was. But I've gotten the notion that it's a really central part of Elixir that I really need to understand. So I'm going to definitely jump on that sometime soon.
Yeah, Chuck, I've gotten into it some. I've done some programming against it just in my spare time, but it's been a while. I mean, I'll just admit it's been quite a while. So yeah, I need to get back into it. Hey folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium. I do remember talking to Bruce and James Edward Gray, when they were guests on the show a while back with their book about OTP. And, you know, at the Code Beam, they talked a whole bunch about, you know, those capabilities that come from the Beam. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. But, yeah, not as familiar with it as I'd like to be, for sure.
Their book is really fantastic. So I've been trying to wrap my head around OTP and things like that. I think I'm probably still scratching the surface, although I've been using it for some time. I think their book is probably, I can't think of any other book. Maybe there's this other book called Little OTP book, but that one I think is quite outdated because I tried to use it before and a lot of the code wasn't working. But that book, I think, is probably the book to actually getting your head around OTP in Elixir. Otherwise, you have to go back to Erlang to get any sense of how things work. So that's actually what I've been doing somewhat recently, is taking a look at Erlang resources, because obviously, if you want to know the truth, you got to go back to where it all came from, right? So Elixir is this kind of a nice syntax around the Erlang ecosystem. And even some things in Elixir, you have to just go straight to Erlang to use. So yeah, you really need to get into Erlang at some point if you really want to level up. And it's one thing is because, yeah, there's just no wrapper around it, like there isn't some of the pieces. And two is that there's already so much material that covers things that, you know, are useful that you really need to know that are covered in Erlang. Like the guy who created Erlang Solutions, I think his name's Francisco. I forgot his last name.
Francesco Cesarini.
Yeah. There you go. I think you studied Italian, so you know how to say his name.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, his book is fantastic. I recently was looking at it and I was actually using it. I actually used it in a project because I had some gen server acting up and was able to actually log into something and ran some traces on it. And it was fantastic. And I don't think I've ever seen much information about how to trace things in Elixir. And that's probably because, you know, all that stuff is actually just using the trace library, which is straight Erlang, not any Elixir stuff. So that is really key to learning anything, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. What about podcasts? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say OTP seems like the next step, definitely. Could you drop a link to that book you mentioned, Alan?
Yeah, sorry. That book, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Because a podcast, I mean, there's obviously, you know, the old episodes of Elixir Mix. So when I'm out biking, I really enjoy just putting on one of them and listening to old stuff. I think there was one that I listened to where there was one of the co-hosts was mentioning the joy of actually going into the nitty-gritty of Erlang, as we were discussing now, of actually understanding the underlying basics of Elixir and the actual history of the language. Not really necessary to understand the syntax and understand what's going on there, but more to have like a context to wrap your head around. It makes the picture more complete. So I really believe in going there down that road sometimes, just reading it up in the history of Erlang and also Elixir. The whole thing about telephone exchanges at Philips is really fascinating, I must say.
Yeah, I have these conversations with people and I try to explain, you know, what, because they come over here, like I had some interviews recently. I'm trying to get some more meat for the meat grinder, right? I got so much work kind of coming in. And so I have interviews with them and they say, well, you know, what do you guys use, Java? Do you use JavaScript? Because that's basically the languages over here. I say, actually, we use Elixir. And I say, you know, what's that? And I said, it comes from this language called Erlang. Have you heard of it? No, what's that? And I have to explain, if you think about it, telephone switches really kind of mimic what we're expecting from services nowadays, right? That they can handle scale at times. They can handle background jobs. They can handle bugs. They can handle upgrades, even hot code upgrades sometimes. They can handle a lot of things. So if you think about the problems that they had in the past versus what we have to deal with now, it's just amazing how, you know, it just kind of lines up. And even for nearly any system too, even IoT, right? If you take a look at nerves, it makes a lot of sense that you deploy this piece of hardware somewhere and you never want the thing to go down. And that's basically what Elixir does, right? And Erlang does, is that it's supposed to run and just never really go down. I heard this fantastic story. I think it was from, I'm going to have Chuck to help me on the name again, Francisco, right? Is that how to say it?
Yeah.
I think it was he gave a story about how they had to upgrade something. So again, take this with a grain of salt, but it's quite a fascinating story. But they had to upgrade some system. And the system basically never went down for, I don't know, 20 years or some ridiculous amount of time. And they've been hot code upgrading or something or maybe they just never upgraded it for a long time. And finally they said, okay, it's at a stage where it's kind of so far old that we have to actually shut down the system and bring it back up in order to actually upgrade it. And, but you know, we should be okay. And it's one of those things that the reason it never goes down is because it's such an important piece of software that's being used all the time. And they did lots of checking. They did all their due diligence and everything like that. And they figured out, okay, if we do this and do all these things, then we should be kind of okay with minimal damage. And they went to reboot the system and it never actually turned back on. They had no idea what was going on and it took them forever to figure out what's going on. Well, what actually happened was that a piece of dust came between, if I remember correctly, it was a piece of dust went between the hard drive head and the hard drive disk, and it wouldn't let the hard disk be read somehow. And so because the hard drive never really ever moved, that's how they actually had a problem. So it was actually rebooting the system actually caused an issue.
That's amazing.
I wish I could remember. I think if we can ever get him on here, it's amazing if he could tell the story again, because I heard that. I was like, wow. So actually, you know, Erlang was keeping the system running because it never had to be rebooted. And also the funny thing is in Erlang and in a lot of systems, if it ever stops working properly, you should reboot it. And actually rebooting has killed it. That's the really ironic part of the whole story, I think.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. Incredible.
That's funny.
Yeah. Good one. Yeah, it would be really fun to have him on the podcast and hear that story for ourselves. Yeah, one of the first things that I looked up when I was getting into Elixir was these videos on YouTube that are actually very good old demonstration videos showing Elixir, but also pointing back to Erlang and stories of, you know, them testing the stability and kind of like that it will work almost in a battle context of, you know, just pulling out switches and putting things back in randomly in different order and then basically having systems recover magically and being, you know, such a good system. And yeah, I would have loved to be in a fly on the wall in Ericsson when they were developing Erlang, because it's just so incredibly reliable. And that's, yeah, one of the things that are really attracting me to Elixir, because it will make my life much easier. The developer experience will be pretty high, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. What other podcasts do you guys listen to besides Elixir Mix?
JavaScript Jabber, React Roundup.
Okay, you're making me feel good, but what other Elixir podcasts do you guys listen
to? I haven't actually picked up another Elixir podcast yet. I'm open for recommendations. I also just use a few change. Does Changelog have any Elixir podcasts?
I don't think so.
No, but they're, of course, the big proponents of Elixir. They switched to using Phoenix for their website.
Oh, really?
Nice. Running in production used to have a lot of stuff, used to have a lot of people that were saying that they were deploying with Phoenix, but then they started saying more about Django, which it's still fun to listen to. But for me, I think I listened to everything I could find. Of course, there's Thinking Elixir. That's a pretty good one. So they kind of broke away from here. The part that I like about Thinking Elixir the most, and I also let Erickson know or Mark know, is that they always cover the news, the recent news. So that's actually a lot of times where I get my kind of, you know, cutting edge, what's going on, and they curate that. And they also have a lot of recent stuff, right? So there's a new feature coming to Elixir, and this is really on topic. There's so bad with his name. Supposed guy, I believe, is Wojtek Mok. I can't remember if I'm saying his name correctly. But he's working a lot with Jose, and he made this feature where you can actually try out Elixir on your computer. Like, so, you know, usually you have to say mix new and you have to create your project. This one, there's no create your project. Somehow it's able to create some kind of temporary project and you just can run and you can just pull in libraries and start using them like a script. So like in Python, you can do something like pip install and then you can start using like the interactive explorer and start using the code. Something similar, I have to take deeper into it. But yeah, Thinking Elixir podcast is great. There's also Elixir Outlaws. Elixir Wizards is still great too, to listen to what people are doing with it, with the Beam. Beam Radio just came out recently. Elixir Talk. The one podcast I wish would come back, and I'm guessing probably never will, is Elixir Fountain. That was really one of my favorite ones. How it's produced, the host himself is great. And also he's kind of a Renaissance man himself. So when he talks about himself or the things he used to do in the past, and he always gives some interesting ideas for how to cook food. So I used to listen to his recipes. It sounded really amazing how he used to cook food, like how to cook a proper steak. He gave some pretty good advice. So yeah, I would say Thinking Elixir, Elixir Wizards, of course, Elixir Mix, Beam Radio, Elixir Talk. These are all pretty good resources.
Nice. Yeah, they're all showing up pretty high up in my podcast app here, CastBox. Definitely add all of those.
Yeah, every time I talk to Johnny, I talk about him bringing Elixir Fountain back. But he's got a lot of stuff going on. So
yeah, I wish he'd just come back and bring some more cooking recipes for us.
He's got some pretty right? good. Yeah.
I believe he said that's how he attracted his wife, is that he cooked her some kind of meal and it was just that good. So there you go. If I remember correctly.
Has anyone, doesn't matter if you won the fight, you just feed her.
Yeah, that's sorry to say, but sometimes it's like that. That you know, everybody gets hangry, right? So that's right. I know sometimes I have to do that.
Has anyone checked out the cookbooks by this Israeli guy called Otto Lengi? It seems to be growing popularity over here in Germany, actually. I see more and more of his cookbooks in different recipe stores, and some of the things that he have are really credible. Like, where it really is outstanding is in, yeah, I'm gonna post the link in the chat. What is really outstanding is like how he makes you mix different spices together, and just has these unconventional combinations of recipes and ingredients together, and it's all. I mean, every single recipe that I've made from his cookbook has been amazing. It's so tasty. So even that led me to actually buy different jars that I have in my kitchen now with every single different spice. Cumin, curcuma, nelik, anise, different spices that I have. And I will combine them together and I will actually ground them while I'm cooking, which makes for a very nice experience for the nose, smelling all those spices.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, I've made a few Indian meals, and yeah, I love just the blends.
Mm.
So good.
That's one of those things that I could never figure out. What is the recipe for discovering the correct combination of spices for, you know, if you want to make a recipe? I have like, you know, everyone knows about pepper and salt. That's fine. But if you have like 15 different spices in your cabinet, how do you know which ones to pick for a given recipe? Perhaps that's a challenge I should implement a software for in Elixir.
Oh, there you go.
The spice mixer, the spice identification app.
Yeah, I think you just get used to them and, yeah, figure out what they each add. But
apply human learning algorithms over time and then you get better somehow. But I want to get there faster, Chuck. What is the answer? How can I get to...
I know, right? Yeah, AI.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm sure
we have
a
show on that.
Ah, yes, I've seen. Actually, I haven't checked it out yet. I'll yet another thing to do on my beloved holiday.
Yeah, in fact, that's one thing that I've been wondering a little bit about with Elixir is, I mean, just given the fact that it's so parallelizable and you really can make each process act like its own piece of the neural network or each piece of its own piece of the simulation or whatever, right? I've been wondering why it hasn't picked up as much popularity. I think some of it has to do with just people adopting NumPy and going with something that's built on it. But besides that, Elixir's fast and it does a lot of the stuff that you need machine learning to do. So I don't know. I've been wondering why it hasn't taken off.
That's why the NX library came out to kind of address those pieces, right? So I think...
Right.
Some of the math, right? You need some crunching, and Elixir is just not. I mean, it could do a lot of stuff, but I think in the end, you can't compare to C and C++. Right? You're talking about NumPy. If I understand correctly, NumPy is just shelling out the C and just serializing back and forth between Python.
Yes.
And so you don't have that. But now with the JIT ASM coming out in OTP24, and now with this NX stuff, I had to dig deeper into how it all works. But that one also compiles to different things. You can also target GPUs. Somehow with this defn macro, and I need to also dig into machine learning to kind of understand how the whole thing works so I can talk about it. But yeah, I think with NX you're going to see a lot more interesting things, and because it has those properties like you talked about, Chuck, that you can really do some amazing stuff with it. And from what I heard, people in like outside communities like NumPy and others are coming over and taking a look and actually also even contributing or even pushing some limits of what NX can do because they see the power of the beam and what you can do with it.
Yep. All right. Well, we're kind of getting toward the end of our time. Are there other kinds of resources that we haven't talked about yet or any other resources that fit into some of the boxes we've already talked about?
I guess one old lesson that I've picked up over the years is always to go check out the docs themselves. The Elixir docs are really top notch. An old Elixir Mix podcast episode actually described them as reading more like a story or a book. So I think it's definitely a place to check out. Always go to the docs first when you're looking up something new. And afterwards, you know, start Googling and look for articles. That's always been my approach.
Nice.
Hey, folks. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been working a lot on figuring out how to help people become the most valuable developers on their teams or becoming the top 5% of developers in the field. If you're looking to level up, figure out how to contribute more, get the career you want, get the career that you want that will support the lifestyle you want, then you should check out the Most Valuable Dev Summit. I've invited some of my friends across the community, people that you've heard of, people that have worked on systems that you use on a daily basis, people who have invented new ways of doing things over the years in programming, and I've asked them one question, and that question is, how do you become a top 5% developer? How do you become one in 20 of the best developers out there? And so we're going to go ahead and have that conversation with them in interviews on the Most Valuable Dev Summit. And you can find that at summit.mostvaluable.dev.
All right. Well, this has kind of been a big, long picks episode, but we're going to do picks anyway. Eric, do you have some things you want to shout out about?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to pick actually Flavor by Otto Lengi, this amazing Israeli cook that I just mentioned. It's just been a wonder to cook different recipes that he has, like reinventing cauliflower, combining it with different spices, coriander and cumin. And it's actually quite fast to make different recipes in his book. You know, anything from half an hour to 2 hours if you want to go for more ambitious recipes. And it's been such a joy. So a regular weekend activity for my girlfriend. We spend a lot of time cooking Otto Lengi, and it's been a delight. So I cannot recommend it enough.
Nice.
Definitely go and check out his stuff.
That just sounds amazing. I love cooking. My kids love me cooking too. So Alan, do you have some picks for us?
Yeah, I have a shameless pick actually. So for myself, I like to actually, as I'm using Elixir, I like to actually take some of the things I learned and try to teach others with it. And so I have my own little YouTube channel for my company. And it's been picking up a little bit of steam here and there. And, you know, some of the videos are pretty good. Some are not so great. But yeah, over here, I try to teach people kind of what I pick up. And even sometimes I forget and I actually go back to my own videos. Or even I work with a guy and I just say, hey, actually, I've done this before in a video. Why don't you check out this video? And actually, he's been able to watch the video and then, oh, okay, this is how you do it. So it's been a pretty good resource for even myself and him and quite a few others. That one for sure. The other thing too is, so outside of Elixir, which I think is really cool, is Flutter is really picking up. So they had Flutter 2.0 just came out recently, which is really, really interesting. So one of the things that I'm unable to do is actually do some proper UI, and Flutter has been able to actually help me to create some really beautiful looking UIs. And now that Flutter 2 came out, they basically support web, desktop, mobile, basically everything you want. And this company called GSkinner came out with this app called Flutter Folio for the event. And yeah, I when I get a moment, I want to dig through the code to see how is it that, you know, if you're using this app on iPad, how is it that the menu looks like this? And if I use it on desktop, the menu looks like that. If I use the menu on web, it looks like that. So I really want to dig in to see how they programmed everything. I think this is really, you know, kind of the future is Flutter for a lot of things because it just makes life easier. It seems like web is now doing as much as mobile apps and also desktop apps nowadays, right? You have like Figma and all these things. So I think taking a look at Flutter and also this Flutter Folio and seeing how everything kind of works really helped to kind of level up UIs out there and people.
Yeah, Flutter's pretty awesome. And I know you've got some stuff coming down the pipe with related to Flutter. So looking forward to that too. I am going to go in kind of a different direction. So one thing I do every 3 months or so is I plan out my 12-week year. And there's this terrific book on Amazon called The 12-Week Year. And they, here, let me just find it so I can put a link in the show notes. But it's awesome. I actually listened to it on Audible. And then anyway, I just can't say enough good things about it. But what it does is by Michael P. Moran and Michael Lennington. And they walk you through the process of planning out your next 3 months, basically. And so you plan out like different types of activities that you're going to do. And some of them are, kind of dedicated to specific time. And they advocate you actually put it into your calendar and stuff. And that's what I'm doing now. But anyway, one of the things that I put into my 12-week year, and this is going to sound nuts because I decided to do this literally yesterday, is I'm going to be running a marathon at the end of my 12-week year, at the end of 3 months. I did run a marathon back in 2019, right before the pandemic hit, and you know, right before some other stuff went down that kind of changed the way I've been doing the podcast and the business a little bit. But anyway, that one I trained for almost a year. And so, yeah, I'm going, okay, can I do this in 3 months? And so I actually went, I've been using a program called Training Peaks, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And let me see if I have a referral code for that, because I might. But yeah, anyway, so I used Training Peaks, and then I bought a training program that goes into Training Peaks by one of their coaches. And so Training Peaks itself, I think, was like $100 for the year or something like that. And then for the rest of it, you can, let's see, you just upload the training program and you just stick it in and it puts it in for all the weeks that you're doing it, right? And so it's a 3 month program. And so I'm going to be running a marathon on the 6th of June. So if you're thinking about Chuck running, then 6th of June, because that's when I'm doing it. I'm going to be running the Utah Valley Marathon, which is just right here in Utah Valley where I live. But I'm loving it as far as being able to just kind of set a goal and then just drop something in. And then I just do what it tells me to do, right? And so I went for a run yesterday. I'm going to be doing some strength exercises today. You know, tomorrow's another run. And yeah, I'm super excited about it. My ultimate goal, just because if you don't think a marathon's crazy enough, my ultimate goal is to complete a full Ironman, which is 140 miles of biking, running, and swimming. So that's probably going to happen sometime early next year. But I just needed to kind of get back in the rhythm of working out. And running is something that I completely understand. So anyway, really, really loving that. I know all the runners are out there going, okay, what shoes do you run in and stuff? And I can't even remember the brand. So sorry. But yeah, that's where I'm at. So I'm going to pick Training Peaks. I'm going to pick 12-week year, and I'm going to pick the training program that I bought. And then for the rest of the stuff in 12-week year, I set some other goals. I'm not going to publicize those, mainly because I don't want to cause issues with one of them directly applies to anyway. It'll cause me problems if I publicize it. So I'll publicize it after the 12-week year if everything works out. But yeah, what we're looking at there is I've been using a program called ClickUp, and it's a task tracking system, kind of like Basecamp, I guess, except it's a lot more powerful than Basecamp, and I've really, really been liking it. And I've been able to put in the tactics from 12-week year and just have it all show up on the calendar. I know exactly what I got to do, and just getting that stuff done has really made a big difference for me. So I'm going to pick that as well. So yeah, I'll put links to all that in the show notes. And I know I kind of rambled, I'm sorry, but that's kind of where I'm at. So we'll go ahead and wrap up here. Thank you both for coming. This was fun to just kind of sit and talk about some of this stuff and dive into what's coming up in Elixir.
All right, cheers. Thanks, had a very good time. See you next time.
Max out, everybody.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.